And it's good to be here. Once again, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. It is a privilege to be here at the West Miami Group. I guess the oldest group in Dade County, Miami-Dade County, that's continuously in this location. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17th, 1981. And that was a little over 30 years ago when I came here. I went to meetings here 30 years ago, and right here, in this spot, you know, and my first sponsor, and my second sponsor, and, well, my third sponsor now. He's here somewhere, hiding out.
Right here.
He's got like, there he is. Is that where you are? How much time you got now?
57.
57 years. Well, yeah, he's a good guy. And one day I'll tell, I think later on in the series, I'll talk a little bit about him, but I'll wait till he's not here so I can tell you some secret stuff behind his back, you know? But he's an alcoholic, but you have to hang around him for a long time to sort of sense it. You know? He doesn't, you know, when they have that much time, you just have to watch him closely. You know? We give somebody a funny look, you know, and that's like a rage for us, you know what I mean? Looks funny, you know. But it's great to be here. We're going to talk a little bit about step three, and I'm going to tell you this is all my opinion. You understand that, don't you? My opinion? You know, I guess you've been around here long enough, they get you up here to give your opinion. You don't have to agree with it. You know, you may not. It's a little hard doctrine, and I still don't understand. I'll never understand till the day I die why they invite me back, but they do. I don't, you know. Alcoholics love train wrecks. I'm here to bring comfort to all you who are disturbed and disturb anybody who's comfortable. So, you know, our spiritual axiom is when, you know, whenever we're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. So if I piss you off during this meeting, you owe me. So I'm like helping you out. Because the way this thing works is you either go out and think about me and get pissed about me and talk about me behind my back and gossip, and ultimately you drink and die. Which sort of like purifies AA, actually, when you think about it. Or you think about it and you get mad at me and get angry at me, and somehow you read the book and you talk to your sponsor and you say, why does that guy piss me off? And you write something down, you do a fourth thing, you talk to somebody, and then you see something in yourself and you realize what it is, and you sort of accept it, and, you know, it doesn't piss you off anymore, and you give it up, and you say, well, maybe I owe that guy an amends. I should have listened to him, and, you know, maybe he was right or something like that, and then you come back here, and I don't piss you off anymore, and then 10 years down the road, you say, I used to hate you, but now I love you. And that's the way it works, you know. Things that piss you off don't piss you off anymore, and so you don't, you know, you stop becoming the thumb-sucking crybaby, and one day, 10 years down the road, you're like floating on air, you know, and the world hasn't changed. Nothing's changed, but the stuff that used to piss you off don't piss you off anymore because your whole attitude about stuff has changed and deal like that. So we're going to talk a little about that and about the third step and, you know, my opinion based upon my experience. And I think experience is important. You know, I'm an alcoholic and like all alcoholics, I think I know more than anybody else, or at least I used to think that. And you know, when you think you're brilliant and you know more than anybody else, you don't have to listen to anybody. You don't have to accept any. You just know you're right, you know, and you know that if people disagree with you, you know, they have to be killed because they're stupid. And but I was at 7:30 this morning. I was at a meeting, a 7:30 meeting over at in Marco Beach, and with about 12 guys. And they had a lot of retirees over there. So like 12 guys, I think there were like five of them who had over 30 years or something. It's a neat kind of little meeting and very relaxing. And it's an interesting deal when you... And one of the things I shared, which is true, is I've gotten progressively dumber in AA. I've gotten so dumb. I've gotten rid of so many ideas, so many old ideas. I've gotten so dumb. I think so much less than I did before. I can't tell you how stupid I've become in AA. I'm so stupid now that every once in a while I do wise stuff. Well, you got to be there. You'd have to. One day, you'll understand what I was talking about. You know, you can be very, very smart and do some really stupid things and hurt a lot of people. And you could be very, very stupid and do some very wise things and help a lot of people. So you got to make the decision whether you'd rather be right or happy. You know, and for many years I wanted to be right. Of course, if you want to be right, you got better be in a position where you're always wanting to argue and get in the last word and get mad and beat up that guy who's disagreeing with you, you know. And I did that for a long time. Didn't work out too well. So one day I decided I wanted to be happy. And really that's what the third step is all about. You know, I know people think it's about God, but it's really not about God until you're 62. Well, you know, I was in this group with guys. You know, the reason I like this group is this morning is an interesting group because I'm 62, which is, you know, I'm going to say that's young. My sponsor, how old are you? Like 80 what? 84. And I'm going to say that's young too. It's your perception, I guess. And I always want to be on deck. You know what I mean? But this group that I was at, you know, there's a lot of retirees that come down. They got a lot of time and everything. And so I was 62. I think I was the youngest guy in the group. And I go to this service with my sponsor on Sunday nights over at Christ Fellowship, where everybody I think is over the age of 80. I'm like the youngest guy. Anybody who walks in without a pacemaker, they applaud. They can't believe it. And they have a widow section, you know, like about five or six gals, you know, they're just sitting there because, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And but the great thing about it is you'd be amazed. And they all got kind of stupid just like me. And I don't say that in a bad way. They just, they're not focused on the stock market. They're not focused on everything that's going on out there. They're not focused, you know what? They're just focused because, you know, they don't have to worry. They're not worried about any of this other stuff that we're worried about, you know? They are free to concentrate on God and what this life is all about and where they're heading. You know, the stuff that bothers you that you think about every day, they're not thinking about it. I just like hanging around those people because it sort of clears my thought about what's important and what's not important. I get a lot of clarity when I hang around people that aren't involved in the distractions. You know, the worldly clamors that Bill Wilson said, you know, once I found God, but soon I was driven away by worldly clamors, mostly within myself. The stuff that sort of takes you away from this stuff and takes you into other areas and thinks about other things that, you know, make you feel bad, you know, and stop you from experiencing much of heaven and being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. So it's kind of neat, but, you know, sometimes you've got to just get a little bit older. Now, I personally think it'd be done at a younger age, you know, if you're serious. But you got to be sort of committed because it requires a commitment to ignore a lot of stuff that the billboards tell you to look at. You know, it's tough when you live in a world when mass media, everything on the internet, everything on the billboards, everything in the movies, everything on TV tells you all this other stuff is important when none of it is important. There's only one thing that's important. And the one thing that's important is the thing that the AA Big Book talks about, but we're only here for an hour. And, you know, if you talk about that thing, the one thing too much, they don't like it at AA meetings because the fellowship doesn't want you to talk about it. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Pelf is an old English word. Pelf is an old English word. You might think it means, well, self. It doesn't mean that. Pelf means material things. You know, in the seventh chapter of the 12 and 12, you know, 12 and 12 is the book that they wrote 15 years after the Big Book. That's the book where they say, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcohol, his devastating weakness, doesn't even say alcoholism, his devastating weaknesses, you know, and all their consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness, he'll find none at all. And then it goes on to talk a little bit about some other stuff, about the steps, and Pelf is material stuff. And in the seventh chapter of the Big Book, it says, that, you know, it does what A does great. A does this great. A is such a bait and switch. It's so perfect for alcoholics because, and I hate to use this word, but it's like we're such bullshit artists that the only way to get us in here is to bullshit us. Now, when you really start getting into the Big Book and you understand how much to feed you a load of stuff, you know what I mean? But they sort of do it, they sort of drag you in. Like they say things, and this is just one of many things that they say in the Big Book. They say things like, we don't want to deprecate material things. That's what they say in step 7. We don't want to deprecate material things. Oh, that sounds pretty good since my entire life is spent thinking about stuff. You know, sex and prestige and the corner office and new car and, you know, and that's why I'm doing all this, so I can get well and sober and pats on the back and get the gal and the promotion, you know. So thank God they say that. That's like they say when they walk in and say, don't worry about God, you know what I mean? And then you walk in here, and as soon if you get about 10 or 20 years of advance, you make it, you start realizing that's what the whole deal is about. But the bottom line is, the first thing they feed you is they say, we don't want to deprecate material stuff or achievement. And then the next line, and I'm doing this from memory, is something like this. But no people in the world made a worse job of their lives than people who focus on these things. money, power, romance. And they name all the stuff that I've been focusing on and how they say that's really the problem. The stuff that I'm focusing on, the stuff that you're going to think about, you know, half an hour after you leave the room. After you stop, you know, after you stop being mad at me for saying what I'm about to say, you know. Start thinking about all the other stuff that's driving you crazy. You know, and so this is, so that's what health means. It means material stuff, because the word is in this little poem I'm going to read you. Okay? It's called The Guy in the Glass. When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf, and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back from the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, we have experienced much of heaven. We have experienced much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, which I believe is something different than we stopped drinking. And I don't want you to miss that heaven stuff. I don't want you to miss that rocket in the fourth dimension stuff. I don't want you to be hanging around at 14 years or 5 years or 25 years lonely. And I don't mean lonely like, you know, lonely. I mean empty. I mean not having any decent relationship. I mean relationship with him, you know, who he is, what they talk about in the book. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. I don't want you to miss what the great events are they're talking about and who he is and having that relationship. I don't want you to miss the incredible relationship you're going to have with other people based upon that other relationship. I don't want you to miss what they're really talking about in this book. I don't want you to think for one second this book is only about not drinking, that this is like a not drinking club. I was with a guy this morning who had 27 years. And he drank. He's now got 6 years. He's back because he thought this was a not drinking club. And now he's coming with a different attitude. I don't want you to miss what they're talking about in most of the book, or in the 12 and 12, or in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I don't want you to miss the incredible things that went on in these people's lives, the enthusiasm they had, the excitement that was going on in their lives. I don't want you to be a guy with 14, 15, 20, 25 years. I sponsor these guys who, when I ask them how's it going, they say, hanging in there. One day at a time. I don't want you to be one of these guys in the back of the room that sponsors nobody because nobody wants what they have. And they say, it's just a bad drink and put the plug in the jug. And they're angry and they're pissed off at everybody and they don't know why, but they're getting their 30-year medallion. Bleeding deacons, and they're ticked off, and they're upset, and God forbid if you're happy around them, you know, evidence of wrongdoing if you smile. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain a new order of things with the essential requirements, simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness, whatever that is. There is actually a connection. There may be a connection. There may be a connection between selfishness and self-centeredness and faith, and the ability to have faith and the capacity to have faith. There may be a connection. There may be a connection. Well, listen, I'm telling you based upon my experience, I believe there is a connection. But I'm also telling you based upon what the book says, there is a connection. And one day, and you may not see the connection right off the bat, And one day you may intellectually perceive a connection, but maybe one day it'll go from your intellect, from your head into your heart, and you'll understand the connection. And when that happens, some incredible things are going to happen to you in your life. When you sincerely take that position, all sorts of remarkable things will happen. That's when you'll start experiencing the new freedom and the new happiness. That's when you'll lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter, and you'll be reborn. That's when that deal will happen. It may not happen for 20 years down the road. You know, this thing is an ongoing process. Because it's only a decision at this point. I had a guy come up to me once. I sponsored him, and he had about 2 years. And it's been my experience, and I think this is biblical, actually, that sometimes men get real nervous around women. That Adam and Eve thing, you know? The whole reason why we're not hanging around naked in the jungle, you know? Because Eve said, you know, eat the apple, and Adam said, well, no, that's the one thing God, the guy, he said not, he says, what are you, a wimp? And that's all it took. That's all it took. You know how many guys drink in Alcoholics Anonymous because the gal says, you got to go to another meeting? That's all it takes. Just a little insult of the ego. Just a little, you know, some sort of statement to make the guy feel that he's less than by a woman. And okay, I'll miss it tonight. That's all it takes. But you want to know what the deal is on that? When God said to Adam, well, why'd you eat the apple? You know what he did? He did what all alcoholics do. But all alcoholics do. Actually, Eve was the alcoholic. He was just a codependent. He did what they all do. He said, but the gal you gave me, she did it. God didn't like that deal. You got to learn from that. He looked at him. He said, you know, look it up, Genesis 3:17. You listen to the voice of your wife. You listen to the voice of your wife. Do you know it's possible? I know you can find this hard to believe. It's possible in Alcoholics Anonymous for your wife to say, you know, if you go to another meeting, I'm leaving you. It's possible, even though you love her and you don't want to leave her, to turn to your wife and say, well, I hope you don't leave me. I love you, but I'm going to the meeting. Do you know it's possible to do that? And feel and be okay with it? It's possible to say to your boss, because I've done it. I've got to leave. I'm chairing a meeting. He says, well, if you're going to leave, I need you to stay late. I need you to do this thing. I don't know why I'm even hiring you. If you're going to be, I said, well, look, you may have to fire. If you're going to fire me, you're going to fire me, but I'm leaving. Now, I know there are some guys in here who say, well, I can never do that. Because their God is their work. Because their higher power is their work. If the higher power says, you know, don't go to your son's birthday party, you know, don't see your wife for 6 months, the higher power, if your work tells you to do whatever, you'll do whatever you have to do because that's your higher power. And they'll prostitute themselves for their higher power, and they'll do anything for their higher power, not to lose the job. And then they'll come in here and get pissed off about anybody who talks about God. And as you watch them in here for 10 years, all they'll be doing is talking about their boss and how they're worried about the boss. And of course, no matter what they do, one day they're going to lose the job because the job isn't permanent. And you can't put your faith on things that aren't permanent, that rust. And they'll drink over the job because they never found God. They found a job or a woman or a man or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. Remind the potential newcomer that their recovery is not dependent. Oh, I'm sorry. It says, belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain a new order of things with the essential requirements. Simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. We're going to talk about that. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. That's page 13 and 14 in our big book. Remind the potential newcomer that their recovery is not dependent upon people. That's their recovery from alcoholism, which is more than just drinking. Because drinking is really just a symptom of disease. That's what the book says. Our real disease centers in our mind, not our bodies. I drank because it's the best thing that... I drank because it was the solution to the problem, not because it was the problem. No suit of clothes, no woman, no amount of money ever worked quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. And that's why I drank. I never even gave alcoholism a chance. When I saw alcoholism raising its ugly head 5 miles down the road, I said, I need a frickin' drink. You know, and I'd whack that stuff down. I didn't experience alcoholism until I got sober. I experienced something called drunk. Now, if you experience drunk enough, it'll get you in trouble and you'll come in here because you think this is about being drunk. But after you get rid of the booze and you're 18 months sober and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you got those 18,000 voices in your head and you want to kill yourself and you don't know what's wrong. And one day you're happy and one day you're sad and then you're up and then you're down and that's the first hour, you know, and you're going nuts and you don't know what's going on because you got a committee going on. And you say, you understand. Now I know why I drank. Because it's not alcohol, it's something called alcoholism. Because you have a dis-ease. And so at 9 years sober, I'm screaming and yelling on the phone about my wife. Because she did this and she did that. Don't ask me what. I don't remember. Probably had something to do with money. Who knows what it had to do with. And after going through a 15-minute rant, my sponsor says to me, he says, do you know why you're upset? I said, of course I know why I'm upset. He said, why are you upset? I said, just like Adam said. I said, my wife. I'm upset because of my wife. It was clear to me I was upset. I could have said my boss. Anytime I see one of you, I say, why have you said, you're going to point to somebody. You're going to say the economy, you know, George Bush, Obama, the world, whatever, the Taliban, whatever. I'm like, why are you upset? I mean, what do you mean why? I just spent an hour telling you why I'm upset. He looks at me, he says, that's not why you're upset. And then shut up. See, I'm an alcoholic. If he told me why I was upset, I'd tell him to go to hell. He didn't know what he was talking about. But he didn't do that because he knew how to handle alcoholics. He knew that we're arrogant. Know-it-alls. So he forces us, you know, never rob an alcoholic of his desperation or his last drink. Never rob an alcoholic of the opportunity to ask for help. Never volunteer. You know, they'll just spit in your eye. So he said, that's not why you're upset. And he shut up. I said, that's not why I'm upset? No. Well, you're going to tell me why I'm upset? He says, you really want to know? I said, well, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? He says, listen, stupid. He says, you're upset because you're upsettable. I'm 9 years sober. I just figured out, at 9 years sober, they had taken away my credit cards, and I had just figured out that if you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I hadn't even got, I was going for my departmental honors in mathematics. I was going for my PhD in mathematics. Algebraic topology, and I couldn't quite understand how that if you spent more money than you make, you go into debt. You know, I didn't understand. You know, I went to my sponsor. He'd say crazy things to me. I'd say, I need money. I don't. I'm not making enough money. He says I'm broke. I owe money. He says that's simple. I can solve that. He says you can solve that. He says yeah. You got money problems? He says yeah. He says well, you got to earn more or spend less. I said, what? There's got to be a third option. But apparently I'm not so crazy because they don't even get it in Congress yet, you know, so they haven't figured it out. So I'm in the same, I understand where they're at. They're where I was at 9 years. I guess somebody's got to take away their credit card, you know, and that's the way that'll happen, you know. But, you know, they act just like I acted. When stuff gets taken away from me, they get mad, pissed off. Remind the potential newcomer that their recovery is not dependent upon people, it is dependent upon their relationship with God. That's the problem. They say, don't let anybody say they want their wife back or their family back or the pelf back or whatever. It's not dependent upon that. It's dependent upon their relationship with God. Hey, this isn't my opinion. This is what the book says. Burn the idea in the consciousness of every newcomer. Oh, but won't that piss them off? I'm just reading from the book. This is how we work. Burn the idea that they can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is they trust in God and clean house. So Bill Wilson has this white light experience. You understand what I'm saying? White light experience. Major. So this is the God of the prophets, you know? Now, so he goes and he sponsors Dr. Bob. He goes through the whole thing. They're reading the Bible. He's going to the Oxford group. The whole thing was biblical. They even wrote in Dr. Bob in the good old times, you ought to read this, that the essential, you know, I went through this last week. The big book was written in 1930. Even though they say, rarely have we seen a person fail, has thoroughly followed our path in 1939. That's when the book was written. The program started. They started their recovery in 1935 before the book was written. So the one thing we know that they weren't doing is they weren't reading the big book. They weren't reading the 12, and they say what they were doing in the last 4 years. For 4 years, from 1935 to 1939, they were reading the Bible. And they even cite in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers the sections that were were absolutely essential, and that was James, the book of James, the entire book of James, the Sermon on the Mount, and some of you have read the Sermon on the Mount. It was given to me when I first came in here, at least the version with Edmund Fox, where he does an analysis. Is it Edmund Fox? Edward Fox? Edmund Fox. And 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter. And so we know they were doing all that, and they were having prayer time and all that sort of stuff, and that was the deal they were doing, to experience this rocket ship job and all that sort of stuff. So Bill Wilson has a white light experience. He's sober for the first time. You know, he's floating on air. He goes to see a guy named Bill D., who is Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 in the Big Book. And Bill D. is sitting there. He's 3 weeks sober. He's just out of the hospital. He's sitting in his wife's home. His wife's name is Henrietta. Not Henrietta Seiberling. It's another Henrietta. There's a lot of Henriettas out there in the Midwest. And Bill D. is looking at Bill Wilson, who probably only has like about 8 months or whatever it is right then or something like that. And he's looking at him like he's God. He's saying, how is this guy staying? He had something. It was more than even just sobriety. It was the way he looked. It was the way he acted. It was the way he talked. He saw, you know, he was like a miner. I talked about the miners last week. He saw something. He says, how do they have this release? Because I'm not drinking and I feel like killing myself. And so he writes this. So when he's talking, and he wrote this maybe when he had 15, 20 years sobriety, Bill D., it's a story in the Big Book, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. When he writes this, he's looking back on those things that were instrumental in keeping him sober. And the one thing he thinks about is the one thing that he saw, which was the bedrock of his sobriety, that he saw when he was 3 weeks sober. And he saw it in Bill Wilson. And this is what he says. He says, he's sitting in his kitchen, and he says the following. This is on page 191, I guess of the third edition, I'm not sure. 191. This is Bill D. talking. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more. I knew there was even more. Something I hadn't got. I used to go to meetings. I used to follow these guys around that were doing the steps. And I'd watch them. I'd watch these guys. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about these guys. You know, the miners. And I knew I was sober. And I knew they were sober. And I knew I was in AA. And I knew they were in AA. But I knew they had something I didn't have. And I'd sit with these guys. And these guys would have 25 or 30 years. And I'd have 25 or 30 months. And I'd sit there, and I just knew that there was a way I could get what they got by next Tuesday. You know, I just knew, because I was so smart, and I was intelligent, and I'd gone through law school, I just knew that if I really stayed up hard, or maybe really did a really good fourth step, or a really good fifth step, or really could figure out the ins and outs of this thing, I could have like 30 years sobriety in like 30 minutes. Because alcohol works that fast, huh? You know, that's what I'm used to, you know? And I've done that. I did that for a while, and I came to a different opinion on that. It takes about 30 years to have 30 years sobriety. But in any event, because you got to go through the oven, which we'll talk about later on. You got to go through the desert time. Yeah, there's a reason why the Israelites spent 40 years in the desert making a 3-week trip, you know. But that's a whole other story, you know. But by the time they got out of the desert, man, they were ready to kick ass, let me tell you. They may have come out of Egypt slaves, but, you know, all the slaves died off. The kids were ready to kick ass. And they did. Okay, 191. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. Just like you're trying to find the answer. Just like you want the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch. I mean, he's remembering it like it was yesterday. You have things in your mind where, like, you remember that happened when you first got sober? Like it was yesterday. He's writing this down for posterity. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, and this is the only line they have that Bill said that he remembers. The only thing he remembers. Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling people. I want you to read the line again. Apparently, there was nobody there to say, we don't talk about God, we don't use the word Lord, you know, there was no PC then. He was just telling what was on his heart. This is what he said. He said, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. That's how excited he was about it. I thought, this is what Bill D. says, I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. So I want you to get the picture. Ebby comes to Bill Wilson. He's going nuts. Ebby Thatcher. He's bright-eyed. He's bushy-tailed. He says, I've got religion. He tells him a simple religious idea. He's all pumped up. Bill Wilson gets pumped up. He ends up getting sober for a while. The loser then gets sober. Now he goes up to Bill D. You know, after spending 6 months, whatever it is, with Ann, you know, they're reading the Bible. He says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing this. You know, he goes through the whole bit. He's like pumped. You know, he's talking to Bob Smith, and all this sort of stuff is going down. Now, fast forward a few months. Page 159. Of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. This is Bill Wilson. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I can't believe it. I'm so grateful. That was and Bill D, he didn't even say it to Bill D, he said it to Bill D's wife. Bill D overheard it, and that's the thing he pins on keeping him sober as Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Now we're about 6 or 7 months later. This is page 159. This is the same Bill Wilson, who, by the way, was an alcoholic. Suffered from the same disease I suffer from, the same dis-ease you suffer from, which may be a disease that's more than just not just drinking, may have to do with ideas, emotions, and attitudes. May have to do with prejudices. May have to do with codependency. May have to do with worrying more about what some slob sitting next to you who doesn't even pay your Visa bill thinks about you than what you think about yourself. You're like the man in the glass. You know what I mean? Well, believe me, I charged up more credit cards with money I didn't have, buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like, you can possibly imagine. So worried about what did I say and why did I say it and will they like me, will they not like me? How many times did I get drunk in the bar just so I could get that feeling that I own the group? Just so I could ask a girl to dance. How strong is that drug? What will I do to prostitute myself? What will I do to fit in so that I won't be rejected and the group will like me? What would I do? Big drug for alcoholics. Going along with the crowd. Very hard not to go along with the crowd. Hey, if everybody else hates God or laughs at people that live, I'm laughing too. You know, if I'm in Key West, I'm drinking margarita. If I'm in New York, I'm drinking a Manhattan, right? If I'm in the Country and Western Bar, I'm drinking beer. I never get mixed up. I never walk in the Country and Western Bar and say, give me a Manhattan. You know, I'm going to do what everybody else is doing just to get along and think that I'm using my free will, that I'm a free man. I've never been free. I've never known the new freedom and the new happiness. I've always had my eye on what you think and what you like and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Never been able to be transparent. Page 159. Tell me whether this doesn't remind you of some things you hear about AA today. Doesn't matter what the book says, things you hear in the fellowship. Because the book says we lose prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people are right. Then it talks about God and it talks, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I'm not even reading to you right now. And here's Bill Wilson just a few months after all that stuff with the white light and the Lord has been so wonderful to me. In the early days, she recalled, this is Henrietta Seiberling now, Bill said to me, this is the same Bill that impressed Bill D, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. This is the same guy. The same guy who was just saved. The same guy with the white light experience. The same guy who said, God's been so wonderful to me, cured. Same guy. I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. Now, why do you think Bill Wilson said that? What do you think happened? Maybe he was talking to somebody and they laughed at him. Maybe a couple of alkies said, what, are you stupid? Maybe, you know, all it takes is two alkies to say you're stupid, and you start thinking, well, maybe I am stupid. Because, you know, we have no self-esteem and no self-respect. You know, alcoholic, you're an alcoholic, so you say things like, I don't give a shit what they think about me, right? You ever say that? I don't care what they think about me. Listen, I don't know how to explain this to you, but I was many years sober until I realized this. People who don't care what other people think about them don't say, I don't give a crap what they think about me. They say things like, pass the salt, or, you know, I think I'll have lobster, you know, or someday. They just don't say that stuff. The only people who say stuff like, I don't care what they think about me, is people that all the time think about what other people are thinking about them. And they spend their whole life worrying about that. Okay, so, you know, that's part of the disease. You know, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and his devastating weaknesses, one of our devastating weaknesses, you got to understand, is the idea that you incessantly need to be loved all the time and accepted by everybody, no matter how crazy or wacko they are. Which is why when you get out of treatment, the first thing you say is, what do I say if somebody asks me will I have a drink? What do I say? What's the cover story? Tell me something, you know, because I'm not going to say to them, no. I'm not going to say to them, what are you, crazy? I'm not going to say to them, tell me something to say to them so that I can say no and they'll still love me and feel good about me and invite me into the group and say nice things about me, because if you can't tell me that, I'm going to have to drink, because I'd rather die than risk the fact that they might not like me. And that's the disease you're dealing with. That's what you're dealing with. That's the real disease. That's why people drink. They drink because they want people to like them. They don't want to feel hard. They don't want to feel deprived. Okay. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. I said to him, well, we're not out to please alcoholics. They have been pleasing themselves all these years. We are out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be in the Rotary Club or something like that, because God is your only source of power. Finally, he agreed. So this concept that you hear in AA, I don't want to hear about God and all the God stuff, believe me, it's part of the disease. It's not part of the cure. It's not part of the solution. And if you hear it in alcohol, it's all over it. Bill Wilson had it. We all have it. The bottom line is, what you have to understand is the nature of the disease is to attack you in such a way so that you're doing everything to justify not doing what you're supposed to do. So every DNA bone in your body that says, I don't want to hear about God, and I don't want to hear that guy talk to me, talks about God, understand that's the disease wanting you to continually be sick and maybe drink again, or if you don't drink again, at least be miserable and never lay a hold of this thing. It affected Bill Wilson, it affects people in here, and you don't know because you're thinking, because you're alcoholic thinking, like it says in the book, is your only normal way. You think it's your only normal way of thinking. I thought for many years, how could I live without drinking? You know, how could I live without drinking? There's a lot of things and old ideas we have in here about drinking and other things. And what do they think that psychic change? What does Dr. Jung say that psychic change is? Here and there it happens once. Ideas, emotions, attitudes, with the driving force of these men's lives are suddenly cast over to the side, and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. And so there's a lot of stuff going on. If you're an alcoholic, believe me, the drinking is the least of your problems. I mean, don't get me wrong. You get through the day, no matter how screwed up you are, you haven't had a drink, you're a success. But the bottom line is, unless you have the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience and can somehow transform yourself from those old ideas and lose those ideas and start thinking soberly and getting emotional sobriety, which is what Bill Wilson talked about, unhealthy dependencies, you don't have a shot in this deal, because you're either going to drink again somewhere down the road or screw up somehow. It's going to be in some other area of your life where you won't be drunk, but you'll wish you were. So here we are. I want to spend the next few minutes we have on pages 62 and 66. It's right before, let me read this. I read it all the time, but I sort of like reading it. This sort of has to do with, because to me this has, I don't want to even talk about the God thing now as much as I'd love to talk about the God thing I've been talking about. I want to talk about the decision thing. I want to talk about why you want to make the decision. You know, because I know one of the things that shied me around from this is I thought as soon as I made the decision, I was a Roman Catholic. Or as soon as I made a decision, I was, you know, something. Or I had to join a religion or whatever it is. So I had a guy, I sponsored him once. I started to tell you this. I sponsored him once. And he had 2 years sobriety, and he always had problems with gals. And, you know, if you sponsor enough guys, you realize that sometimes what happens is they fall in love and then they drink. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's they fall in love and then they drink. They can't handle rejection. They fall in love, she leaves them, they drink. So in any event, so he was sort of skittish, but, you know, after a couple of years, he figured, you know, he'd date. So a gal, he met a gal in AA, or met a gal, and she asked him, or he asked, you know, to go to the movies. And he came up to me, because he wanted to have a conference. So he came up to me, and he says, she asked me to go to the movies, and he says, you know, I just don't know, you know, I mean, I'm just not ready, you know, I'm not ready for a relationship, I'm not married, you know, I'm not ready to get married, you know, I'm not, you know, I can't handle kids, you know what I mean, I don't really have a job, and he went through all the things, you know, I mean, you know, my father and mother got divorced, and, you know, and I, you know, and all this sort of stuff, and after he was done talking, I said, now, George, listen to me, it's a movie. Movie. It's only a movie. Movie, that's it, you know? Say, yes, we'll go to the movies. Maybe afterwards, I don't know, dinner. Who knows, you know? Whatever. So let's not make this too big a thing, you know? You know, don't make this too big a thing. This is a road. Remember the road, two roads diverge in a wood? You know that old poem? I should have had that poem here. Maybe next week. Two roads diverge in a wood. I took one. I didn't take the other. It doesn't matter which road you're going to take. You're going to come to a fork in the road. There's a fork. God? No God. You get to take the fork, no God. You get to look at all the people with the no God. You get to look at the people with the God. You take the fork. It's, you know what it is? It's one step. You know? I mean, really, the diaconate is far down the road. You know what I mean? The religious, join the religious organization where they talk about it here and they encourage far down the road. Maybe yes, maybe no, just another step. It's just little steps. It's just a decision. It's just a decision. They're talking about, these people are saying in here, we've experienced much of heaven. They're saying in here that this is the reason we've experienced heaven. The central factor in our life today is that our Creator lives in our hearts. It says all sorts of things in here about why they're experiencing heaven and how they're experiencing heaven. They talk about how they were agnostic. They wrote a chapter to the agnostics. They say this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. God either is or he isn't. What's your decision going to be? You know, choose the God road. Choose that deal. That's the thing we chose. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough. We want you to go down this road. We want you to experience what we experienced. We want you to have what we had. We know you're agnostic. We know you're atheist. You know, we understand that. You're allowed in the... Hey, listen, the only requirement for membership here is not even to accept God. It's a desire to stop drinking. But once you're here, we're telling you this is the deal. We're not going to kick you out if you say you're an atheist and agnostic. But understand, this is the deal. This is what our stories are about. You know, it says right here, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of living Creator, with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms, as soon as we're willing enough to try. We, in turn, sought the same escape through all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. Further on, clear-cut directions given shown how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in his personal stories describes in his own language, from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. How much clearer can they be? And what is that decision going to get you? That's what you want to know. That's what you want to know. This is what they say. They say our problem, your problem, my problem, if you're an alcoholic, is that you're selfish and self-centered. That, we think, is the root of your troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking, you step on the toes of others, they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, but usually we find we're a part of this deal, so our troubles are of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic, if you're an alcoholic, is an extreme example of self-will, not God-will. Self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. We don't expect you to even understand this. Above everything, which I believe means, you ready? Above everything. You're looking for an answer. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. You know what that looks like? You know what selfishness looks like? Well, it looks like a lot of things. See, sometimes we see these words, we don't know what it looks like. Later on in the book, it talks about, it says this line later on in the book. It says, we turned back to the list. This is after the fourth step. For it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see the world and its people really dominated us. The world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, that means real or imaginary crap, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. We find that not only are we addicted to alcohol, we're addicted to feeling sorry for ourselves. We're addicted to taking things personally. We take everything personally. Something happens in Washington with the Congress or something, I take it personally. Something happens with the towel, I take it personally. I take everything. Somebody looks at me funny, you know, he could have indigestion. I take it personally, you know. I take everything personally. Every second of my life, every breath in my being is designed so that I'm walking the earth. I'm just waiting for somebody to do something that I can take personally. If it's raining outside and I want to play golf, I take that personally. Why me? I can't believe this has always happened to me. Everything I take personally. You know how hard it is to live your life when everything is so personal to you? That has to do with alcoholic selfishness. That's self-centeredness. You can't wish that away. You can't think that away. As a matter of fact, the more you try to think it away, the more personal you'll take it. And I can tell you've tried that deal. It doesn't work, does it? You're just thinking about them, you know, and, you know, all that sort of stuff, and why they did that, and who they think they are, and they don't know who they're messing with, and I'll show them, and they'll be sorry. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme. There's a connection between selfishness, self-centeredness, and taking life personally all the time. And being upsettable. That's what my sponsor was trying to say. You're taking things personally. My wife still acts and does the same stuff as she did when I had 9 years. I just don't notice it. And when I do, I just don't take it personally. You know, there's a big difference between her getting mad at me and yelling at me and saying stuff to me, whether it be wrong or right, and my saying, I can't believe you, you know, I think I told you guys the dog story, you know. My wife says to me one night, we're going to sleep, and she says, I want to get a Shih Tzu, a little dog, and it costs $250. I said, okay, we'll get a Shih Tzu. And as my head's in the sand, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm about to go to sleep, she says, And I know you're going to open up that door like you always let the dogs out and they always get killed because you're always opening the door and you maybe, and she's already pounding me for letting the dog, the imaginary dog out that we don't even have out of the door. Well, if you've been married 30 years, you understand what I'm talking about. Now you got to understand, when I was 9 years sober, that would have been a 3-hour fight. I don't let the door open. I've never let it. Yes, you did. What about the other dog? That would have been a 3-hour fight. But you know something? I don't take it personally. I figure she's just upset about something, but it has nothing to do with me, you know. I'm just the guy in the bed next to her, you know. We've got nobody else to talk to, you know. So our troubles, you think, well, you may think it's funny, but it cuts down to the fight. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. Calm down. We may go a minute over. It ain't going to kill you. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness. Here's the answer. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. God makes that possible. That's not me. Don't go out there and say, Russell is saying God makes that. Well, of course I'm saying it. I'm reading it. God, you know, listen, I don't know what program you're in. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if you think Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't take a stand on God, I'm sorry. They do. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them. They didn't work. That's what the whole chapter of the Agnostics said. Neither could we reduce ourselves to endless unless by wishing or trying. We had to have God's help. And they say, this is the how and why of it. He's the main guy. He's the one we're looking at. And later on, I'm just going to read this one thing, then we're quitting, okay? When we sincerely took such a position, when we sincerely made this decision. Listen, you don't have to get married. You don't have to join the church. You know, it's just a movie. It's a movie, you know? When we sincerely took such a decision, I'm going to try this God thing, see what it's about. All sorts of remarkable things followed. Don't you want, if you're going to pay a buck to be here, wouldn't you like to have a remarkable thing happen? I mean, really. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He's not a higher power. He's the highest power. Now, maybe you schlubs should get the deputy assistant power. You know what I mean? The lower power or not so great a power. I got the highest power. You know what I mean? Because with my problems, I need like the God of the universe. You know what I mean? We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed. If we, you ready? It even gives you instructions. If we kept close to him, and did his work, performed his work well. If we stay close to it, that means you got to find out who he is. You got to figure out, you got to follow around and try to figure out who he is. That means you spend a lot of time thinking about him. Where can I find him? Who is he? What does he want me to do? Those are the questions you're asking yourself. It has nothing to do with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or, you know, or the baseball game or getting upset. It has to do with him. It all has to do with him. Who is he? You know, when you start thinking about stuff, when you start worrying about stuff, when you start going crazy about stuff, why don't you ask yourself this question? Does this have to do with him? Am I thinking about him and what he wants and who he is and how he wants me to be and what work am I performing for him now? I guarantee you, if you're all upset and crazy, you won't be thinking about him. You'll find you'll be thinking about pelf or other stuff. And I guarantee you, if you start thinking about him, start thinking the way they're telling you to think, you won't be worried about that other stuff because you won't take a whole lot of stuff personally. I understand it's going to take some exercise. I understand it's not easy to do. I understand you think completely opposite of this. You think I'm crazy. I'm laughing all the way down to the bank. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we escaped peace of mind, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. How many people want that deal? How would you like to lose? What would your life be if you weren't worried about stuff, if you weren't anxious about stuff, if you never worried about stuff again? If you woke up and you didn't worry about what's in your bank account, if you didn't go to sleep worrying about this, if you weren't worried about what they thought about you, what would your life be like if all your worries and all your cares and all your anxiety and everything you think about, all of a sudden was down to like zero? How would that be for you? And you don't want this thing? Because some schmuck in the back says, I don't want to hear about God. You're going to let him crap all over this thing for you? Because you're worried about what he might think about you? What are you, two? I mean, really? Slap that guy. God bless you. Next week, 4. Okay, we have no dues or fees.